You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Jesse listeners? It's me, the Oracle. I've got a little tidbit for you. You're always asking me, hey, Jesse, what do you listen to? What do you listen to? Man, have you heard the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show? Clay and Buck, one, they're good friends of mine. That tells you automatically how awesome they are. And their show is outstanding. Clay and Buck tackle the biggest stories in news, politics, current events, and of course, they add humor to it. You learn things, but you get to laugh. Here's a little example of what you get when you listen to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show.
Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
The chaos that is unspooling right now at Columbia, at Yale. I saw NYU is starting to have their own issues. I bet... Unfortunately, my undergrad alma mater, George Washington University, which has had its own major issues with this, could also have these encampments on a quad. If it's occurring at all these other schools on the East Coast, I would think that it would likely happen there too. So, couple of things. I said as a dad that if I had a kid who was making that I was paying nearly $100,000 a year, 75, 80, whatever the math is, to go to college, and I found out that my son or daughter was getting arrested for living on a quad in a tent to protest Zionism, I would be very tempted to say, you're cut off. Take out whatever loans you need to fulfill your undergraduate degree. Dad and mom are not going to subsidize your idiocy in this way. I really think I would do that. I've got a 16-year-old. He'll be off to college in 2 years. I can't imagine him behaving like this. But I would be very tempted if he got arrested for this to respond in that fashion. You pay your own way from this way out. You think you're smarter than dad and mom. I'm not going to subsidize it. You raise the issue, and I would think that's the majority of people whose kids go off to school. But you raise the issue, Buck, and this is even more alarming, that you think there's a lot of parents out there that would agree with their kids getting arrested because they are anti-Jewish, anti-Israel as a homeland. And certainly there are like the Ilhan Omars of the world that its brand as value is growth because her daughter got arrested at Columbia.
Yeah, of course. She just looks like she's now down for the struggle and the cause, right, and everything as well. Yeah, it's totally on brand for Ilhan Omar. I mean, anything that's like, you know, he hates America and hates Israel. Like,
but
the Omars are all about it.
Oh, they're all in favor, yeah, of it. They take all the advantages of Western civilization and try to tear it down in the process.
I gotta say, I don't know. I mean, I don't have kids, so I can't speak to, you know, how different they can be from the parents ideologically. I mean, I know people who have kids who are, you know, very left wing, despite the fact that the parents are themselves conservative. But I just say this: I think a lot of the people that are being arrested who have purple hair and emotional instability and deluded about both what's really happening in the Middle East. How many of the people that you think are out there protesting have even been to the West Bank or the Gaza Strip? I'd say less than 1%. They don't know a damn thing. How many have been to Israel? Maybe 5%, maybe 10%, maybe. I mean, I might be being generous there. They have no idea what they're talking about. But they know, just as they did with BLM and that whole narrative, it's like cops are racist and America's racist, that it's just, it is the slogans to get the mob incited. It is not about what is true. It is not about the reality. I mean, in the case of BLM, for example, the fact that there are only about, you know, call it 10 to 20 unarmed black men killed by police in this country of 340 million people in any given year is a remarkable testament to, generally speaking, how law enforcement is professional and fair and not racist in this
Correct.
Country. And any objective observer would say, oh, my gosh, America's cops are doing actually a really good job. But put that aside for a second. In the context of these campus protest lunatics, I think it's so interesting also that they're always saying no Zionists here. Well, no, they really mean no Jews. You know what I'm saying? Like they use Zionism as a stand-in, but actually what you're seeing is that they blame the Jews of America for what's happening in Israel and the Middle East, and they don't create this separation. And I think that there are some Jews who have been used to being very leftist and being critical of Israel and are now realizing, oh, no, when Ilhan Omar criticizes Israeli policy and talks about the Zionist entity, it's not a foreign policy critique. It is a lightly masked, I don't like the Jews game that she's playing. You know what I mean? It's there's a falseness. There's a dishonesty to a lot of these campus critiques. And any time they're using the term Zionism, well, what does that mean? Somebody, are you a Zionist if you think Israel should exist? Because you're going to have a lot of Jews in America then who are Zionists, aren't you? Right? I mean, think about it.
Well, I look at this and I think it's a failure of parenting to a large degree. And your point that some parents are going to agree with this, yes, the Ilhan Omars of the world do think that, despite the fact they won't really, although they're pretty close to saying it. I grabbed like I meant to mention this last week, but I should mention it now. They did a vote in the House to basically decide, hey, do you support Iran attacking Israel? Like, let's just condemn Iran attacking Israel. It voted 404-14 to condemn Iran's attack of Israel. 13 Democrats voted no. I mean, if you are not comfortable saying, yeah, Iran shouldn't attack Israel, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush, Greg Kassar, Jonathan Jackson, Pramila Jayapal, Hank Jackson, Barbara Lee, Summer Lee, Alexandria, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, Delia Ramirez, and Rashida Tlaib. That is, I think, fairly classified as the anti-Israel component of our country.
And to our point, now, I don't. You named a whole bunch of names.
Yeah.
How many of those members of Congress are white that voted against?
I'm going to look right now. I don't think any of them.
Isn't that interesting? If it's just about foreign policy and ideology, why is it that, you know, and again, let's someone tell me, maybe I'm missing one or two. You rattled off 14 names, but certainly, I don't know, 11, 12 of the 14 are not white. And I only bring it up because Israel-Palestine in America is about race politics. It is not about religion, even. It is not about the Balfour Declaration and UN Resolution 242 and what is it? The, you know, the 1967 and the it is not about any of those things in the American context. And that's what you're seeing on this campus. Now, there are some people who take it to that level, but overwhelmingly the narrative is white oppressors are harming a non-white minority who are the victims, and that is Israel and that is Palestine, and that is the only thing that these protesters really know about this. That the only thing is that they feel entirely justified saying you have no culture. How can you even say that? There are Jews from Russia, there are Jews from Ethiopia, there are Jews, you know, in Israel, I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to say you have no culture. And also the Jews have been there for over 2,000 years. Well, whose culture is it really, right? I mean, this is where you start to get into, like, you know, who's really responsible for falafel? Like, you can talk about this stuff all day long. It's race in America. In the Middle East, it's something else. And that, I think it's interesting, Clay, you rattle off all those names. I know it's about Iran, but Iran is doing it because of Gaza. That's why they're attacking. I know they say, oh, it's because they hit us in Syria and they hit the embassy, whatever. But no, they have this mounting political pressure. And the, you know, Hamas is only able to do what it does because of the Iranian backing.
To your point, every single Democrat who voted against condemning Iran for their attack on Israel is non-white.
I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's certainly noteworthy, I think, if we're talking about the way that racial politics in America play into a Mideast conflict. And why is that? And by the way, you could even take this to Israel and Iran. It's the same thing, to be clear. Israel, white. Iran, they think of as brown and, you know, Arab brown. It's not Arab, actually. It's Persian, but they think of it as brown and oppressed, even though actually Iranians, I mean, there's, you know, now we get into, I always like you get racial sidetracked politics, because
this is, I think, the integral issue here is that it's not only has it completely devolved into a Jewish people are white and brown people are oppressed and they're always the victims, even when they are the aggressors and going and killing 1,200 innocent Jewish people, which is important here, which started all of this.
And you know what's also just going to be a little mind-blowing for some of these leftists or libs when they figure it out? Iranians are Caucasian, basically, of descent from the Caucasus. If you go back and you look at a lot of the historic movements.
This is where we're, I mean, it's interesting, but racial politics has basically devolved into the era of if you have a drop of black blood, which was how we defined slavery in like the 17th and 18th and 19th centuries before slavery was ended. That's basically where we are. And the thing to think about this, Buck, on the Jewish front is all of these Jewish people who are traditionally left-leaning in their virtue and their voting, many of these people who are still voting Democrats were involved in the civil rights struggle all over the American South and all over the nation supporting black people. As recently as 2020, Jewish people thought, hey, BLM, we're with you, I would say, as an ethnic group. And then they become the victims of a brutal attack on October 7th, perpetrated by awful terrorists. And somehow they are the colonizer and they are the aggressor and they are the oppressor. And all the people that they stood up for generations to try to advocate for their own full humanity and full voting rights are now turning on them and saying, you bad, awful white person. And I think it has to be a jaw-dropping moment. Imagine if you're 65 and you're just a lifelong leftist voter. And suddenly you went to Columbia or you went to Yale and you're looking around and you thinking to yourself, oh, my goodness, this is like the 1930s all over again in America. And somehow the political party I've spent my entire life advocating for, raising money for, giving money to is now basically espousing Nazi talking points. Imagine what a unbelievable discombobulated sense that must provoke on you, which is why I think people are going to change their mind. But your argument is the legacy of voting in the past is so strong that they won't even recognize the reality in front of them today, which is a real challenge for 2024.
I think, unfortunately, that's probably going to be what happens. But I love it when I'm pessimistic and I'm wrong. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen that often. But I do love it when my pessimism is incorrect. So we shall see if people change their votes based upon this madness or not. I just think it's really important to get these things right as much as we possibly can. And we want to get everything right. That's what we do here on the show. We cut through the nonsense, the noise, and try to speak the truth. And when it comes to the stock market, and things are looking a little bit shaky these days with the economy, the stock market, editor and columnist Mark Chaykin also cuts through the noise, the distraction, and the propaganda. You see, Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years. In his time on the street, he invented 3 new indices for the NASDAQ, and Mark has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent focus on AI stocks. He says most Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI frenzy. Mark is calling this a new dawn for U.S. stocks and predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days' time. That's why Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks now with our listeners. He put everything in a new presentation you can watch for free at 2024AIStock.com. 2024AIStock.com, paid for by Chaikin Analytics.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors.
Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen and subscribe.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.